welcome to another edition of the Sidearm Delivery Podcast, part of the D1 Baseball Podcast family. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling. This week, we're back with a little bit different episode. Normally, we like to dive into a specific region or conference with our D1 baseball analyst after chatting with the head coach, but this week, we're giving our full attention to our head coach guest. Last episode, we talked to a young buck in the industry, Charlotte second-year head coach Robert Woodard. This week, we're devoting the entire episode to a chat with New Mexico head coach Ray Birmingham after the grizzled veteran announced last month his intentions to retire from baseball following the season. This weekend's series between the Lobos and San Diego State will be the final one for Birmingham, who said he's got a special exit plan after Saturday's game, one that perfectly fits his personality. Birmingham is retiring after 43 years as a head coach and more than 1,200 baseball wins at the collegiate level. And we say baseball wins because he was also an assistant coach on the number one ranked basketball team at the JUCO level during his time at New Mexico Junior College. He's been a New Mexico man through and through, helping build the programs of three different New Mexico colleges. Birmingham has spent the last 14 seasons at the University of New Mexico, where he helped take the Lobos to five NCAA regional appearances after the school hadn't been to a regional since 1962. Three times New Mexico won its opening game in the NCAA tournament, but never were able to advance to a super regional. Twice they led late in the pivotal Day 2 winners bracket game, only to be heartbroken by late comebacks. Through the devastating losses and the triumphant victories, Birmingham has always remained a New Mexican ambassador and fervent supporter of local New Mexico student athletes. 167 of his players have gone on the professional ranks, with 39 so far at UNM, and he'll be adding a couple more in the next few seasons as players like three-time Mountain West Pitcher of the Week Justin Armbruster finish up their college careers in Albuquerque. We talked to Birmingham about his decision to retire, what he'll miss the most, and his plans moving forward, including how he plans to stay active in the local community and at UNM. We also discussed the program he's leaving, what he hopes for his successor with the Lobos, and his advice to young coaches just breaking into the profession. We'll be taking a look back at his career and how the game has changed over the six decades he's coached in, dating back to the late 1970s. Later, we throw some superlative categories at Birmingham so you can find out his most meaningful games, the coaching decision that still haunts him, and the biggest success story during his coaching tenure. Without further ado, let's bring in the man, the myth, the legend, Ray Birmingham, head coach of New Mexico. Coach, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Good to see you. Good to hear you.
You're going into your final weekend as a head coach. What went into this decision to announce your retirement? Why now? What went into the decision? Why did you decide that now is the time to hang up the clipboard, hang up the cleats, and take some time off?
Well, turning 66 years old pretty quick was one of the reasons. My grandson went 3-for-4 in a baseball game and I didn't get to see it was another reason. My wife, who's been very patient with me over all these years, needs me to go travel with her. That's another reason. And, you know, all the reasons that anybody would retire. I've been a lucky man and I've enjoyed it. And I needed to, there was a few things I needed to finish with the stadium and I've got those done. And now I've left it better than I found it and I'm good to go. I've been a lucky man to be part of all this for so long.
43 years, more than 1,200 wins. You coached in six decades dating back to the late 70s. So what are you going to remember the most about the game, I guess?
The great people that I've got to be around, and I can start naming off names from way back in the 70s and the things that I've got to, the experiences I've got to enjoy. And, you know, like a long time ago, I was that little pesty little coach back in the 70s and the 80s, bothering anybody I could to learn the game. And at two different times in my life, the great Tommy Lasorda and the great Bill Verdon told me, pump the brakes, boy. Just be a people person and everything else will work out. And they were correct.
Well, you've been around a ton of people. You know, what do you think you're going to miss the most about being around the ballpark and being around the players, the people that you would normally see on an everyday basis?
That's it. I really enjoy people. I really like to see the positive things that they do and the positiveness of what they bring to college baseball and the experiences and the people all over the country. And I got to coach several USA teams in junior college and in Division One, and meeting the people in other countries and finding out that we're all the same and that we all love baseball, the great game of baseball.
Yeah, what was it like to wear the red, white, and blue? You were a member of the team, most notably the 2014 USA Baseball Collegiate National Team, and to have an Albuquerque native win the tournament MVP honors in Alex Bregman that summer.
That was a blast with Dave Van Horn, Rob Childress, you know, and Stevie. It was Steve Rodriguez at Baylor. It was a blast. It was really, really very enjoyable, and I was very, very humble that I got to be part of it. So, you know, I got to coach the junior college team, all-stars, and around the country, and got to coach in China. Unfortunately, almost started an international incident when they didn't play the national anthem one day, but that's water under the bridge, and that's my redneck ways. And so we got the national anthem finally played after my little tantrum, and we were good to go. So I've enjoyed a lot of things, and it's been fun. I'm humbled and appreciative of the opportunity to be part of it.
You're a man that's set in your ways a little bit, but obviously have adapted with the game. Where have you seen the game of baseball change as, you know, as you've been a coach from the high school level to the junior college level up to, you know, D1 at New Mexico? Where have you seen the biggest adaptations of the game?
Well, obviously it's the biggest change in baseball all around in every level is the data. Data has changed the game. Information is being shared by everyone on a very extensive basis now. It helps with everything. The dynamics of the young people coming up has changed. When I first started coaching, the ABCA was the only place where we could get training and find, especially when you're out in Hobbs, New Mexico, and finding people that would help you teach the game better fundamentally. But now you have baseball players and coaches all over the country will explain this, that now you have baseball players that have been trained since they were eight. And before, we didn't get that. We got a raw piece of clay. And you'll find there's some frustration in that too, because they will tell you that now the hardest part is undoing some of those lessons and training that they got since they were eight and get them back to what they need at their program. So that goes on. And then the draft becomes important to a 12-year-old now. He's working to go to get trained so he can get drafted when he's 18 or 19. And when I started, the only draft you worried about was the one to go to Vietnam. So it's all different now. Way different.
Well, you got a lot of life lessons through the game of baseball, but also even before you started your baseball career, you know, you did some different things. What things prior to your baseball career do you think helped you make you such a successful baseball coach, including, you know, during your time at New Mexico Junior College, you were an assistant basketball coach for a team that was number one in the country?
Well, I think, you know, I think work ethic is the key to everything, and I think the gentlemen, you know, the Gary Wards, and the Frasers, and the Stevensons, and those guys, Bob Bennett, I can go around the country, and Ray Tanner, they worked. You went to work, and an 80-hour week wasn't a big deal. 80-hour weeks of not just going out watching players. I mean, we drove the bus. We worked on the bus. We worked on the field. We had to get back home in the middle of the week to mow the infield, to edge it, to work on a sprinkler system, to build your own L screens, to find tennis net, to make your L screens, to raise money. You were it. It was you. It was just you, and you had to do it. And Coach Frazier did the, you know, he made college baseball better because his work ethic was unbelievable. And his dreams for college baseball were unbelievable. And all of us should thank those kinds of gentlemen who built their own ballparks and saw that for college baseball, because we didn't always have these nice stadiums, that's for sure.
Well, one of the things that you've done at New Mexico is definitely lift up the facilities and, you know, fundraise and be able to build up the program there. And you talk about one of the things you've always talked about is leaving, you know, somewhere better than where you found it, whether that be cleaning up the dugout when you leave the stadium. What does it mean to you to see where the Lobos program has gone from when you took over to where it is right now, as far as the facilities and just the type of player that you can bring in there now?
Well, there's about $13 million worth of stuff here now. And the way we travel now, we used to travel by bus from Albuquerque to San Diego, which made it extremely hard. And then the air conditioning go out and everybody be in their boxer shorts and t-shirts on the way there or way back. So that's happened. But now it's in great shape. It's in great shape to be competitive at a high level on a regular basis. You know, guys all over the country. Larry Hayes did that at Texas Tech. And then they got Tim Tadlock, who's a fierce competitor, and he's taking that program to a higher level. This program now needs that young blood to jump in here and do the same thing that Tim did at Texas Tech. And those are the kinds of things. Mark Johnson did it at Texas A&M. You know, all those guys were good to me. Ron Polk did it at Mississippi State. Those guys are the guys that've laid a solid foundation, and I hope I've done that here.
Yeah, what is your hope for your successor? What do you want for them, and what do you think maybe are maybe a couple of the ideal qualities for the next guy that comes in behind you?
Well, he needs to be a people person. He needs to be excited. He needs to understand that you might have to clean the toilets for a couple months when the janitor's sick, or you may have to do this. You're not going to have to do everything that I had to do, but those things, that blue collar mentality has to be part of the guy that comes in here. He has to be a blue collar. And they use the word grinder today, kind of a loose term. And us old guys laugh because they don't even have a clue what a real grinder was. Because Coach Frazier, now that's a grinder. Skip Berkman, that was a grinder. I mean, those are the guys that were always on their feet trying to improve where they were at. Skip Berkman didn't go to LSU hoping that he could get the next job. He went to LSU to make LSU what it is today. That's what Skip Berkman did. And his roots are in small college. His roots were with Coach Frazier.
And you obviously have always been a champion of the New Mexico athlete. Why have you always emphasized recruiting the local New Mexico kid? And why do you want someone to come in and be there for, you know, a long run rather than someone who's looking to, you know, make their name and then kind of bounce to the next stop? Why is it important to you? Why has New Mexico's athletics been so important to you?
Well, it's always been important to me, especially baseball, because baseball wasn't treated as in high esteem as basketball and football in this state. Mm-hmm. And I felt like we had plenty of great baseball players, and you saw them over the last decade, a lot of first round draft picks out of this state. But at the same time, when I got here, I remember the great Pat Casey when he was at George Fox, and I was at another NAIA school, and we were trying to get to play Ed Schiff. And Pat told me that things changed for him once he got into the Pac-12, and then he started getting the Oregon guys to play at his college. They weren't going off to Stanford or UCLA. So he told me that because that in-state mentality to fight for your state is a huge chemistry builder, and he's right. He was absolutely right. Patrick knows his stuff.
What do you think is going to be the biggest challenge for your successor coming in?
I don't think there's going to be a challenge if he just does everything properly and gets after it. I maybe building a staff, but our AD's really good. He's all about helping, and he was under Skip Berkman, so he gets it. I don't think there's any challenges. I think it's set up to take off if you get the right guy, and the right guy's 100% in.
Well, you had over 40 years of experience. And I believe it was something like 38, 39, 40 of those years with winning records. How do you sustain success for such a long time to be so successful at every stop along the way. What was kind of the secret sauce for you?
Well, I'm not that smart. I work really hard. I can work long hours and you just hustle. And then I was lucky, I guess. It's just watching, you watch all these guys do this all over the place. They take, Coach Corbin did at Vanderbilt. He saw the opportunity. He knew what he could do, and he went to work. That guy worked his tail off, man. And it's just a lot of hours. That's what it is. Coach Corbin worked his tail off, so there you go. There's the results. And that's a passion. You got to have a passion for it, because if you don't have a passion, and then you got to have support. If you have support, and everybody believed in Coach. So I've watched guys do it for decades. You know, the template's there. It's not rocket science.
It's all about the work ethic for you, but what do you hope people will remember as your legacy at the University of New Mexico, but also throughout your coaching career in the state of New Mexico?
Well, I hope that they know that I care about the game. I care about the people in the game. I care about the kids in the game, and I care about promoting college baseball. And I think college baseball and the NCAA should understand the one thing: we all have a passion to continue to make it as good as attractive as basketball and football. And a lot of people have that passion. And I think if the NCAA got some business people together, not academians, but business people, like Coach Frazier was a business person, Skip Berkman was a business person, if they got those guys in the room, we could make some changes in college baseball to where we were all beneficial from it. And we all saw that we could make this financially okay for our athletic directors to continue to promote college baseball, because we haven't even got close to how much we can make this financially sustainable if we make some adjustments. And a lot of coaches, Randy Mazey at West Virginia, a great human being, Jim Schlossnagel, Dave Van Horn, you know, I can just go down the row, John Savage, they want this to happen, and they're in a brotherhood of baseball people to make this happen. And all we need is just a little getaway and a timeout to reorganize and improve college baseball to be as awesome as football and basketball. And we're really close.
What would be the first thing that you would tackle there if you had the opportunity?
Well, there's a lot of things that are there. You know, people in the conversations have gone on forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the RPI now, it's gotten kind of archaic. If you see some of the names on the RPI and where they're sitting right now, people have learned how to manipulate the RPI to where it's not truly there. It's not correct. So I think adjustment there, maybe an adjustment in the summertime to bring more fans in, so it's not cold weather for John Anderson in Minnesota, who's a great coach, or people around the country that have some things in their way that we could fix for them to make all of college baseball exciting everywhere at every level in the country, because it is. A great man named Woody Hunt is retiring this year too. And Woody and I used to talk on the phone at 10 o'clock at time at my night. It was 11 his time, and we're recruiting by phone, and we would laugh about where I just called or where he'd been. Woody Hunt, God bless you, man. So baseball is really good in junior college and NAIA Division II, III, I. The pecking order doesn't really matter to me. It's the coaches that do it at all those levels are outstanding people, and they want to promote the great game of baseball. And there's a lot of kids playing baseball now that we can include and help our school enjoy baseball, and baseball, they're glad baseball is part of their athletic department because it's a great game.
You talk about the different levels of college baseball. What do you think is the biggest difference with Division I baseball versus the other levels, you know, since you've coached it multiple?
Well, you know, there was at one time that the best baseball teams in the country weren't Division I. Mm-hmm. You could call Ed Sheff and he'd tell you they probably beat the number one Division I team in the country at one time. And you could call Wayne Graham when he was at San Jack, and San Jack might have been the number one team in the country in junior college at one time. And you could do that at all times if certain guys got on their team. Grand Canyon, back in the late 80s, had a team that would step on Arizona State and Arizona regularly. So You know, I don't like for there to be a pecking order or a separation. Baseball is baseball, and I like for everybody to have an opportunity to do well at it. So, you know, Division I's become the quote-unquote only place that real ball players are at. That's not true. That's not always been true. There's good baseball everywhere, and I like to promote it all. I've been at every level. I've enjoyed every level. I've watched great coaches and great players at every level. And so I don't have a separation in my head of those levels.
You talk about how there's great baseball everywhere. There's great coaches everywhere. But what advice would you give a young coach that's just entering the profession? You know, a guy that, you know, maybe he finishes up his professional career, or a guy that didn't even, you know, play professionally, but wants to get into coaching. What's the best advice that you could give them?
Do things right. Do things right and work hard and do a great job of where you're at. A lot of these guys are constantly jockeying for the next job, and don't give it all to the place that they're at now. You do a great job where you're at, somebody will call you. You don't have to politic and lobby. Do a great job at where you're at. Case in point, Tim Tadlock. He was a great assistant coach at Hill Junior College. He was a great coach at Grayson. They hired him as assistant at Oklahoma. He did a great job at Oklahoma. And the AD that was at Oklahoma went to Texas Tech and saw that Tim did a great job and hired him at Texas Tech. And now he's done a great job there. Do a great job where you're at. Be loyal. Be committed. They write your paycheck. Give them all you got, and it'll work out.
And if you take a program like Texas Tech to multiple College World Series appearances, then, you know, you end up with a lifetime contract with Tim Tadlock, we reported on yesterday. So, you know, the way you can grow in this game is always fun to see those stories of guys that start at the lower pecking order and work their way up. Is there a guy that you're most proud of, whether it be an assistant that you've had or a player that you've had, just to see the growth from where they started to where they are now, or where they, you know, finish their career at?
You know what? I watched guys. Brendan Donnelly played for me, and he won Game 6 of the World Series. Armando Almanza came from the border town of El Paso, lived right there on the Rio Grande, and he was in the World Series, and they won the next year with the Marlins. And Mitch Garver, and helping Alex Bregman, and watch what he did and how he did it. You know, people, the people you're around, and you help them become successful, and they do it the right way. And none of those kids are selfish people. They've stayed humble. They're very good at their trade. And they're appreciative that they got to play baseball at the highest level. And that's what they were shooting for. And the state of New Mexico helped nurture them to do that. So the family of baseball, I appreciate watching kids. I appreciated coaching against Aaron Judge because he was such a humble human kid, a human being. And he was a humble kid, and he grew. He got better. He only hit 18 home runs in three seasons in the Mountain West, but he got better. And he knew that, and he's a good person. So, gosh, I mean, I've been lucky to see a lot of guys, a lot of things, and meet a lot of wonderful people, including you, including Aaron and Kendall. Just great kids. I've watched you grown up from you were just starting. You were wet behind the ears, and now you've turned into really good journalists, and it's just awesome to see. I like to watch people get better.
We've seen a ton of players get better underneath your tutelage. What do you hope the players remember most from their time under you, though?
Well, they probably remember my Marine days or my late night exercise programs when somebody didn't go to class or something like that. You know what? I enjoyed them all. I enjoyed every one of them. I enjoyed watching the growth. I just can't tell you how lucky I've been. I'm truly appreciative to the coaches I coached against, everybody. It's been wonderful. It's been outstanding.
Is there a singular lesson that you hope your players, you know, throughout the years have taken from you?
Yeah, I hope, you know, being part of community. I do a lot of work for the Children's Cancer Center and mm-hmm. some elementary schools and some other things. I hope you learn that it isn't about you. It's about us. It's about we. This country, this college baseball, you get caught up in it when it's about you, you're going to have a miserable results. When you make it about us, you make it about we, you make it about team, we're all in college baseball together. When you do things with that in mind and worry about that us instead of me and I, your life gets better really fast.
You obviously have been a part of so many teams, and not just the guys on your roster, but the community that you're in. Is it going to be a little bit different for you when you step away and you don't have that built-in roster of 35 guys that you know that you're seeing, basically on a daily basis? When you step away, do you still have a team basically around you that you're going to be trying to nurture and trying to nurture that we versus, doing things for yourself?
Yes, I am. I'm about to get on some boards of some things in this community that will help those less fortunate than ourselves. And I will build a team around that and try to do some things that will help all those around us and make our community better. Those are important things to me.
See, I knew the coaching wasn't going away. I knew you were just moving on to a different, a different job as a coach, not actually a full retirement.
Well, a friend of mine named Jeff Idelson used to be the president of Cooperstown, the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And now he's back as an interim. And I'm about to go up there and hang out with him for a couple weeks, and he's going to let me see the real stuff. And I can't wait.
So you are – okay, there's a couple of me things in there. Well, so just give me the overview. What does retirement look like for Ray Birmingham? A guy that's used to being at the field and a true grinder, not the colloquial term, not the more recent usage of the term, but, a true grinder that's used to working all the time. What does retirement look like?
Well, I'm going to be a really good grandpa. I'm going to be a really good husband. I'm going to be a really good dad. I'm going to work really hard at that because, people forget that coaches spend more time, unfortunately, raising other people's kids than their own. And I need to catch up. I want to make sure that I have done a good job being a grandpa and a dad and a husband, because when they were doing special things, I was gone. I was in San Jose, or I was in Fayetteville, or I was in Stillwater, and they were doing something that I needed to be there and see. So I got to catch up, because those people are real important to me, and I've got to do some things to make those last memories happen. I'm 66, baby. I'm in the fourth quarter, baby. I got to hurry up and get that pass offense.
I'm sure that the family's excited to have you around more. Is there a big vacation planned or anything? Obviously, when things can, travel can become fully normal again. Do you guys have something lined up that, you're going to take a big family vacation to the Greek Isles or somewhere?
I'm from Hobbs, New Mexico. We're not going to the Greek Isles. We might go to Paris, Texas, or somewhere like that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I know we're having a get together here next week. We're going to get together and laugh and cut up and remember stuff. Players are going to come by. I've had so many players and coaches and people I even coached against just call me and congratulate me on retirement. And it's been humbling, real humbling. And, gosh, I appreciate it, because nobody really cares how many championships you win or how many games you won more than they care how you made them feel.
Mm-hmm. Is there been one of those calls that stood out to you the most?
Oh, there's been a bunch. Dave Van Horn reached out to me and I hope Dave wins it. I really do. Go Hogs. Rob, a lot of people have reached out to me. I could go down the list. The day that I announced the retirement, I had like 500 text messages and my phone went dead, and it was crazy.
So you just turned the phone off then? On my birthday, there's just so many notifications that come in. Sometimes I just put the phone away, don't even mess with it. What do you do on a retirement day when everyone wants to send their thanks and their congratulations?
Well, I appreciate it. I really do. It's good to catch up with people you haven't heard from sometimes in 20 years. Mm. But yeah, you just got to take it one at a time and go back and review them, because I make sure that if somebody reached out to me, I reach back out to them And gosh, I really appreciate it. But yeah, you got to get away from the phone. I can't wait to get away from this phone. Promise you. It's been stuck to my ear for 43 years. I started off when you had to dial the phone and it was in your office with an answering machine. I didn't have an answering machine to begin with. They didn't have them yet.
That's when you truly needed a secretary to actually write down your messages for you.
I was the secretary.
Did it all. Well, let's jump into a couple of superlatives. Tell me, what's the best game you've been a part of?
Oh, gosh, there's been a lot of them.
I didn't say there's going to be easy superlatives.
Oh, gosh. You know, when I got here, you know, in the early 80s, winning state championships and coaching high school was fun. Winning the first championship coaching basketball was fun. Building a field at little old NAI school, College of Southwest, and getting to the championship game in the region was fun. Winning the New Mexico Junior College National Championship and all those championships was fun. Winning championships here and getting into the top 25 was fun. We went to, in 2010, we had never been, this school had never been to a regional since 1962. And so we went, I remember the NCAA had moved the scheduling up 1 week. They put a week up and they announced it while we were at St. Mary's in California in 2009. And I immediately got on the phone and called Augie and said, I want to play the University of Texas with this open week. And he said, he was gracious enough and said, done deal, coach, University of New Mexico and Texas opening week in 2010. So Augie was wonderful. And so we went out there and we won the series against a great pitching staff. And that catapulted us into an at-large bid in the regional. It was the first time that we had ever been to a regional at the University of New Mexico. And then that group of kids went on to win 4 conference championships in a row. So that was memorable to me because when we got the last out in Austin, I looked down on the field and at every position was a New Mexico kid. And that was pretty cool for me.
I think you're selling just a little bit short, not just going to Texas and winning a series there, but that was preseason number one, Texas. So that was one of Texas was rolling really well at that time. So you know, a big series win there for you guys to kind of put yourself on the map and then rolled that into that first regional and then 4 straight, you know, and you guys continued that and you had 5 NCAA regional appearances during your time in New Mexico, a couple of, I think 3 regular season titles and 4 conference tournament titles. Maybe I have that reversed, but what's the one loss that still haunts you? There's got to be one on the negative side too. What's the loss that you still think about every once in a while?
In 16, when I thought we could upset Otim in Lubbock, we had the lead late in the game and we probably made a bad pitching change and Steve Smith had an opposite field home run and we ended up losing and we were in the driver's seat to win that regional. And it just went south on us. And baseball can go south on you in one pitch, one decision. And that one hurt pretty bad.
And the next game, you guys played Dallas Baptist, another close loss in that. So back-to-back, you know, really tough games there for you. How do you bounce back from those type of losses? You know, that's one of the things that, you know, everyone looks at the highs and can see those. But when you go into an offseason and you lost a couple of really close games, how do you get your team to bounce back and how do you as a coach bounce back from those really close losses?
Well, you know, I may have won, you know, 1,300 games, but I've had my butt kicked about 700 times or 600 times. So I'm used to it. I can rebound. You can't be very good until you've been punched in the mouth a lot. And buddy, I've been punched in the mouth a lot. So rebounding is just, go home, stay upset for a day or two, take a shower and get going again. Cause the next day you go to the yard, the scoreboard says 0-0 last I checked. So
how about for the players?
That's the great thing about baseball is baseball players are resilient people. They all know that they're going to win some, they're going to lose some. and they're trying to stay above 500. And that's important. That's what baseball is. And, you know, baseball players get a game the next day. Football guys got to wait 7 days before they play again. So baseball players are the most resilient people on the planet, beyond a shadow of a doubt. The game teaches you that.
All right, who's been the most resilient player? Who's the best player that you've coached as a head coach?
You know what? I've had a lot of good ones. I've had a lot of guys that went on to be big leaguers, and a lot of guys who are really good that never got to be big leaguers. So I don't know. You know, I've watched so many guys. I coached against John Lackey, and everybody talks about the great pitcher John Lackey. That guy hit like 8 home runs in a regional. I saw him. He was a great hitter too. I'm like, God dang. I couldn't pick. I mean, there's so many kids. I like to watch, you know, most coaches go, oh, I got this guy was a big leaguer, and then this guy was a big leaguer. I don't do that. I watch the guy who was an overachiever, and he was the backup second baseman that came in and did something special. And then he got his degree, and he went to he went somewhere. He raises a great family. Him and his wife have a beautiful family. He's the president of Billy Bob Johnson's bank there in Texas. And he's a leader in the community, and gosh, he's a good guy, and everybody likes him to be in that position. That's what college athletics is about. And those are the things that I appreciate. I mean, Kevin Lauman was one of my first assistant coach, my first players recruited to Mexico Junior College. He's the head coach at Galveston Community College. He's doing a great job. Everybody loves him down there. I like it. That's cool. Those are the things when they leave here and go on to do something good, a solid living, a leader in the community. I like those things. Those things really make me feel good.
See, that's what one of my next questions was going to be, your biggest success story, and I figured you would have an answer similar to that. Is there something else that stands out, you know, as a biggest success for you throughout your career?
Probably building 3 fields. You know, it always seemed like I took the job that was the hard one to take, and I would turn down the easier ones. You know, I've built 3 programs in New Mexico. I've built the field, the facilities, and put them in place where they will last forever. I'm kind of proud of that. I'm kind of proud of giving New Mexico baseball a jolt so that the Cody Rosses and the Alex Bregmans and the Matt Moores and, you know, on and on, those guys went on. They were part of this baseball swell that went on in this state over the last decade, and people realized that there's some baseball players in this state with an attitude that can be successful at the highest level. Mitch Garber, I mean, those guys, you know, Swihart, I can go on down the line. And it's just fun to see that, because it didn't happen in the previous 30 years.
Well, you definitely played a part in that. Why do you think, though, that you have taken those more difficult tasks, those more difficult jobs, and maybe turned down some of the ones that may have been a little bit easier, things may have been set up a little bit more for you?
Well, excuse me if I say this, but my wife says it's because I'm a dumbass. But, you know, that's whatever.
Has it just been the challenge of it? Is that part of it? Do you see an extra challenge and that kind of motivates you to do a little bit more?
Yeah, it does. It's kind of the thing, like, you know, guys will take over a program that somebody else has already set up to be successful. I kind of take pride in saying, wow, because when I took the University of New Mexico job, I didn't apply. They called me. There was some people that were pushing for me to come up here and do this. And I had another job where I would have made a lot more money. And I took it because of my passion for baseball in the state of New Mexico. You know, it was in bad shape. And there's a lot of guys that interviewed for this job that came and checked it out and said, there's no way I'll do it. And so I don't know what it is, but I like doing it. I like doing that. And now this is the last baseball field I'm doing in New Mexico. So those are the things I'm kind of proud of. Yeah. New Mexico Junior College baseball field is as good as any baseball facility in the country. And I can't say that College of the Southwest is, or University of the Southwest is, but it's nice. That was my that was my training ground. So, but it's still good. It's still a good baseball field. So yeah, I enjoyed that part. You know, I watched Gene Stevenson, a friend of mine, do it at Wichita State, and I didn't do it to his level, but holy smoke, what he did at Wichita State, if you knew where he started from, that's unbelievable. That's a story in itself, what he did at Wichita State.
You've definitely built up the New Mexico program, and the next person taking over should have the facilities and everything else that give them an opportunity to be successful. We'll see where the program goes after your retirement, but we hope that you'll still be around the yard some. So, you know, when we make it out to a game in Albuquerque, that we'll be able to see you around the yard and that you'll still be taking in some Lobo action and some college baseball action, because always a joy and a treat to talk with Ray Birmingham. So, Coach, thanks so much for the time, and we look forward to hopefully seeing you around the yard still.
I'm proud of you and Aaron and Kendall. Good job, young man. You've done a great job. Thank you.
Well, Coach, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it. And best of luck this final weekend that you head in with a final series. Best of luck with accomplishing all the next level of goals that you'll have as a father and a grandfather and an ambassador for the community and for New Mexico baseball going forward.
Well, I'm going to ride a horse out of the stadium on the last day. So come on, Al, you can ride with me.
I'm going to look forward to seeing those photos. I'm going to keep myself off. You know, as someone who lives in L.A. now, I've become too L.A. I don't think I can jump on a horse right now. So I'm gonna back away from that one. But I look forward to seeing the photos. Are you donning a cowboy hat for it?
Absolutely.
I didn't know if they'd get you out of the baseball lid. So that's good to know that you will, you know, ride off into the sunset, hopefully, with the cowboy hat on.
That's right. That's how it's going to roll, baby. God bless you.
Ray, thanks so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Bye.
Well, guys, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Sidearm Delivery Podcast. Thanks so much to one of the great people in the coaching profession, New Mexico head coach Ray Birmingham, for joining us, sharing some insights, and taking a look back at his career. Thanks as well to all of you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the podcast and hope you'll return for the next episode of the D1 Baseball Sidearm Delivery Podcast, hosted by yours truly, Shotgun Spratling. Ding, ding. Ding, ding.